Good morning. You're watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. Good morning, JT. Nice to see you back.
Well, thank you. Great to be back. How you doing, Ted? Doing okay this morning?
I'm doing okay. So it looks like the Iran war is back in effect.
Yes.
Ceasefire in name only. A judge is reaming DC jail officials for the way that they're mistreating the suspect in the White House Correspondents' Dinner shooting. The president of Cornell hit and run at least one of his students and ran over their foot while trying to get away from talking about Gaza. And Trump says he's going to pull out at least 5,000 troops from Germany and maybe any other European country that he deems has not been helpful enough in his war against Iran. So lots to talk about. Please like, follow, and share the show. If you have questions about these or any other topics, please go ahead and put them in the YouTube chat live or in the Rumble chat, also live, in the 9 a.m. Eastern hour. We're here Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern time. And so I think that's about all the housekeeping we have to do. JT, you want to choose a topic to go first?
Yes. Well, I guess there are a few things, right? 5,000 troops from Germany is interesting. I know a lot of people are pointing to Donald Trump as being something unique. And I would agree that his manner is unique.
Mm-hmm.
But that's this manner. Is it, and I'll ask you this, the United States, and I guess there are two things at once that's taking place here, or three things. There are more, but I'm pointing to three. One, this idea of the U.S. effectively throwing his weight around and is effectively saying, hey, junior partners, we expected you to fall in line, period. Yes, Iran didn't attack us. We don't care that Iran didn't attack us. We expected you to go to war with us. There's that. Two, this notion that a country that spends $1 trillion on military goes into a conflict and then after the fact turns around and says, hey, we can't do this on our own, even though we could. But we still want your help with this. And we're very angry at you. And so we're going to punish you by pulling 5,000 troops out of Germany. Okay, you have like 50,000 troops. 5,000 is not really going to make that big of a difference. It's symbolic at best. And third, this power projection device called NATO, that I don't believe for a moment that the United States in real terms, even from a congressional standpoint or otherwise, or presidential standpoint, will pull out of. It's all for show, even though Germany and Europe is somewhat freaking out about the fact that the U.S. is doing it. How do you view, give me your take on this.
Well, everything you just said, and I would add a few things. First of all, you know, this is kind of like when in New York City, during the peak of Black Lives Matter, and the cops said, oh, okay, if you don't like us, then we'll just stay home. And every New Yorker was, oh, no, not that. Don't stay home. God, that would be terrible. And, you know, just nobody cared. And it's sort of like that, right? I mean, if I'm German, let's face it. We know why those NATO troops got there in the first place. They're basically residual post-war occupation troops.
Yes.
And it's an occupation. I mean, the only benefit that these troops have in Germany is that I guess some of them go off base during R&R and they spend some money in the community. That's probably it. It probably benefits the sex worker community a lot. I'm not really sure what it does, you know, for the people of Germany. Who are they being protected from? The big bad Russians? Get real. Be serious. Right. So, you know, if I'm Germany, I'm like, you can take those 5,000, you can take 10,000, you can take them all. You can close Mannheim Air Force Base. I don't care. So I don't really see how this is a big threat. I agree with you that there's something really strange about a president who decides to go it alone, not consult with his allies, and then expect his allies to be on board for the ride.
Right.
I mean, I can definitely see the case for saying, you know, because I want to act quickly against Iran and because out of an abundance of caution, and I don't want to take any chances with leaks. And I know that Israel and I can get this done without the help of the Germans or anyone else. Then I'm just going to go solo. But you know, when you go solo that you're, you know, alone, that's how it is. And to not, and that's the part that like, you know, I haven't seen this kind of behavior from the United States in the past, right? That part is unique because it's illogical, it's irrational, and everyone's going to be able to see right through it. And when you're hurt, when you're whinging and complaining about, like, well, where are the Germans there to help us? It's like, why would they be? You didn't ask them to. I mean, you know, I love my analogies. This is like how the DNC kept telling progressives and leftists, don't vote for us. We don't need you in the general election. We have enough anti-Trump Republicans. They'll support us. And we're like, okay, we won't. We'll sit at home or we'll vote for Jill Stein. And then it's like, how dare you? That's why we lost. It's like, no, we lost because you told us not to vote for you. And we just did what you what you asked. I mean, so, I mean, I think this is, it's very strange. And I don't know. I mean, it's certainly not playing with the American people. I mean, the American people, you were out yesterday. The polls that came out yesterday from the Washington Post shows that the American people radically disapprove of this war. And that includes a lot of Republicans.
Yes. Yeah, it's wild when you think about it. I mean, yes, America treats everybody like vassals. And true, America treats everybody like a junior partner, meaning whether you're talking about Europe or anybody else, we don't have equals in the way that we look at things. And honestly, that's part and parcel to the reason why the U.S. is deal adverse. We don't consider the rest of the world equals, meaning we don't have to deal with you as equals, period. That's just the way we look at the world. And I would argue countries are just an extension of people, meaning when people say for the moment that you had a country that did not have a police force, that didn't have a prison system, and the expectation was, all right, we're not going to prosecute laws, but you just need to be nice to people. That's all we need. Mm-hmm. What kind of country do you think we would have? And I guess the point I'm trying to make here is, if you have a country that's like the U.S., a superpower, that there is no penalties imparted upon it for bad behavior. So it can go to war. It can kill a million people in the Iraq war. It can, you know, knock over governments and everything else. But there's no consequence. What is there to inhibit, corral American action? And the answer is nothing.
I'm going to push back on that. So please think about, like, the behavior. I mean, most of us live 23.9 hours a day without ever encountering any law enforcement officer, right? It's like you go to a bar, there's no cop, right? You go to a diner, there's no cop. You ride the metro, there's usually no cop. And yet people aren't eating each other. They aren't raping each other on the bar. It's like there's no, like, Jodie Foster in The Accused. There's nothing like that, right? It's sort of people behave normally. And what prevents people from, I mean, first of all, most people don't want to do anything wrong. Sure. Okay. And then among the people who do, who are kind of on the edge, who would like to, but, you know, are not sociopaths or psychopaths, they're restrained by the fear that if they did something untoward, let's say, you know, you're at a bar, you grab someone's ass, you know, you're probably going to get beaten up by the other patrons. And even if you don't get beaten up, you're not going to be welcome there ever again. And people will not talk to you. So I think social opprobrium is a big thing. I think in the international community, look at what's happening to Israel. They have become a pariah state, and it hasn't played out completely, but it will. And it is. And we can all see which way it's going. I think the punishment, as it were, for the United States is to do basically is sort of like the Germany thing. You know, countries are going to start ignoring you. They're not going to want to have anything to do with you. They're going to work. They're going to do workarounds. You know, producer Robbie West sent me a link the other day to an old Joe Biden speech from when he was a senator. It was right shortly after the collapse, or maybe during the collapse of the Soviet Union. And he said, oh, what are the Russians going to do? Make an alliance with China, Iran? And the whole room is laughing. And then it's like, come on, they have to deal with us. Well, they do until they don't have to. And and now they will make a deal with the Chinese and the Iranians. So I think that, you know, the punishment, it takes a while, but we are going to become ostracized. We are becoming isolated. Our allies know they can't count on us. We're not reliable. we're not nice, we're not dependable, and we're not respectful. Maybe that's the biggest one I left for last. And, you know, we're not treating them like they're real countries, like you said. Yep. So, I mean, I take your point. I think that's the punishment, though. I don't think there's not, there can't be like a, you know, a Clathu, you know, Deus Ex Machina, like comes from outer space and says like, you, America, bad, boom, swat you across the head. Like, I wish, but it doesn't, yeah. But I think it's more the way I said.
No, true, I agree. True, I accept that. I would make the point of saying laws are not for regular people, laws are for sociopaths, if that makes sense. Meaning, I agree with you that most people don't want to dominate. Most people don't want to rape and murder and kill, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But laws aren't for them, right? Like laws are for people who don't care about those things, who want to exert control. Look, the truth of the matter is people are different. You have some people who are more passive, and you have some people who get their kicks off of domination. It's like, I appreciate this role of being able to dominate somebody else. Laws for those people, right? Like it's for the lunatics of the world. And
it's for psychopaths. Yeah.
It's for the psychopaths. And I agree with you that there's social pressure that gets applied to people, but that's assuming that people care about the social pressure. And if I'm in a position of, let's say, leverage, maybe I don't care about the social pressure. I don't care if you don't like me, if you have to deal with me either way. And I'm saying the US has been in that position for a very long time, where it's become accustomed to it. And so when it's interacting with other countries and dealing with other countries, it's doing so from this position of, we are the indispensable nation. We are, you know, we are different. You know, we have the rules-based order with us setting the rules. Like that's a mindset that is exemplified A, through policy, and B, how people respond to us, what we get accustomed to. And I'm saying that is under pressure. And that is under pressure from A, what is happening in real world physical matter reality against Iran. That is under pressure from real world physical matter reality of us losing in Ukraine. And for China, in regards to what China just did and saying, hey, if you're here, you're not going to pay attention to American companies, period. Meaning we don't care about your sanctions. This is pressure. But all of this pressure is coming from U.S. behavior. And I'm pointing out that until that pressure is applied, nothing in U.S. policy changes. At least that's my take on it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, I agree with that. I think that's where we're at. We have a question that I think segues nicely into our another topic of ours. Alex Bringlow, thanks so much for becoming a member for a month. What the hell happened with the U.S. ship, missile or no missile? So Trump announced something called Operation Freedom, which basically means that the U.S. Navy has offered to escort non-aligned neutral flagged ships through the Strait of Hormuz. And the Iranians have been firing at these American vessels. Now, the thing is, JT, we've been told repeatedly that like the Iran hasn't laid a hand on us throughout the war, right? Now, we learned that we know it. Like I had a lawyer who used to always like to say, not only is that not true, it could not be true. Right. And it's not true. And now we know it wasn't true. It was covered up. It's kind of remarkable. I don't think I've ever heard of the United States military ever refusing to acknowledge that one of its facilities or vessels had been struck. But that's what's happening in this conflict. You know, they're just trying to put a good face on everything. Hell, I'm not really sure we know the total number of American airmen and soldiers and sailors who've been killed. We don't know. Certainly we don't know about the number of injuries. So I guess the question is, we know that missiles, including cruise missiles, have been fired at American vessels. I wouldn't put it past the Trump administration or the Department of War or whatever the fuck it's called now to just say, to cover it up if they had. But clearly, I mean, the big point here is the ceasefire is no more, right? It's in name only. I mean, the UAE says that one of their energy facilities was set on fire, probably by a drone, maybe by a missile. Yeah. Oman is not specifying exactly what happened to it, but Oman got struck by the Iranians, apparently, or might have been by the Houthis. The Iranians sent six small patrol boats to go after the commercial ships, but the U.S. claims to have destroyed those, and two destroyers, but one, at least one tanker successfully traversed the Strait of Hormuz. I guess someone was impatient. But this is going to, look, the Iranians are going to draw blood. There's no question about it.
Yep. So there are a few things. One, the blockade is not a total blockade. Mm-hmm. So there's that. There are holes in it. It's porous. There's that. From the standpoint of the U.S., the U.S. trying to blockade Iran, it hasn't blockaded everything. It's only blockaded some of the ships that have gone through, meaning it's not a total blockade. There's that. Two, you're right. There's a discrepancy taking place where the U.S. is like, yeah, we murdered X number of Iranian boats. Iran is saying those weren't IRGC boats. Iran is saying those were just innocent people who were boating, kind of like in Venezuela and the Caribbean. What's true? Who knows? Iran has thousands of those boats. If they lose a few, that's not necessarily indicative of anything significant. You're right. It seems that Iran did fire on a tanker that tried to, I don't know, pretend as if it was going through the Strait of Hormuz, mm-hmm. or tried to go through the Strait of Hormuz. Either way, that tanker hauled ass and left after being fired upon. Mm-hmm. The U.S. came up with this Freedom Project. It's not escorting anything. It's saying, hey, guys, here's a way that you could try to get out of the Strait, and good luck in trying to get out of the Strait. Meaning, they're not escorting anything. It's not like the U.S. is taking ships through the Strait and saying, okay, we're going to welcome you through. The U.S. ships aren't getting near the Strait because the U.S. knows that Iran will blow that shit out the water. There's that. The hot war. Yes, because, like, I don't know how this... There is no ceasefire in real terms.
No, there's no ceasefire.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, and they did fire on the UAE. The reason is because the UAE has been assisting the United States hand over fist. And the UAE has a pipeline. It starts with an F, Fallujah, whatever the name of the pipeline starts with an F. That pipeline gets around the Strait of Hormuz. And so I don't remember if you and I were talking about it or me and somebody else was talking about it. Our thing was the UAE is crowing about this pipeline that is going to be the first thing that gets hit. Fast forward 2 days later, that is the pipeline that effectively gets hit and is attacked.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't know how this doesn't become hot again. It's a standoff.
I mean, what's interesting to me is that the Iranians know that like time is on their side, like the Rolling Stones yes. song, right? But so this is frustrating Trump. And the only thing he can really do in his mind is try to provoke a game change, right? And so but the key word here is provocation.
Yes.
That provocation is going to get him what he does not want, which is a hotter war. And the only way out, Mr. President, right, is to arrive at a satisfactory negotiation with the Iranians. I mean, that's the only way this is going to be settled. And yet it seems to be like not something he's willing to do in a serious way. When's he going to come to Jesus? Is it going to be when a sizable number of American sailors are killed by an Iranian missile? What's it going to take?
Look, from my point of view, and I've had this point of view for a while, Iran always had to have this fight. The reason why I say Iran always had to have this fight is because of the thing that I alluded to before. People and countries respond to leverage and force and the perception of what I think you can do. If I'm the U.S. and I'm a superpower, and I don't, like, for example, let's take this out of the hands of war, for example. Let's say it's chess. Let's say I'm rated 2100, which I was before blacks. If somebody who's 1800 is talking to me, I'm not going to accept them as an equal to me, under no circumstances. Now, you can say that's ego, you can say that's hubris, fair enough. I fought my ass off for that 2100 rating. If I see your rating is 1800, I'm gonna respect you less. And it is gonna take you fighting with me to get across to me that you're an equal, meaning you need to beat me, or at the very least, you need to draw in fighting me. And I'm saying the same thing is true for the US. They're looking at a regional power from the point of view of the US. We spend $1 trillion on our military, we never respected the country in which we thought we could run our shot over. And Iran needs to be able to at the very least show that they can not be pushed over. And until that happens, the U.S. is going to take a predatory point of view, meaning we're not going to make a deal with you because we don't believe you're an equal to us. However, if Iran can hold off the U.S., that's different. Like, meaning Trump is deal incapable. The U.S. is agreement incapable to somewhere like Russia. Hell, we're agreement incapable to even somewhere like China. The same thing is going to be true for Iran. A war was always necessary for Iran to, at the very least, show resilience. At least that was my point of view. And that's my point of view now. The U.S. is going to go back into a half war because Donald Trump is deal incapable. I could be wrong. We'll see.
I have a little glitch. Do you? Is everything still running? Let me add Robbie.
Yeah, no, you are running. You keep dropping off for some reason, but we can hear you. You just have the deprogrammed logo instead of your handsome face.
Right now?
Let me see. Right now, I've got your handsome face.
Okay, how strange. All right, I might hit reload. Anyway, I'm going to put you guys. So you guys are both on, right? Yep. I'm going to hit reload and see if I can, because it's frustrating. Okay, you guys keep going.
Okay. Yeah. Look, the reality of it is foreign policy is not about who's nice, who's pleasant, who's polite. It's not about any of that stuff. From the U.S.'s point of view, we're an imperial power. Donald Trump is doing any and everything in his power to maintain U.S. hegemony, hence fighting all across the globe, right? So you got the CIA and the U.S. working in Ukraine. You got Trump snatching leaders from the Caribbean, from South America. And now you have a war in Iran that Trump can't extricate himself out of, because how could he? Because the U.S. president doesn't want to lose. It looks bad when you lose to what you've considered to be a middling power and a country that you said that you can do whatever you want with, which is obviously not true. And as you guys pointed out, the Hill is coming out with an article saying that the majority of Americans think Donald Trump is mentally and physically unfit to serve.
Well, I would at least temperamentally, right? I mean, is he crazy in the same way that, you know, Joe Biden was crazy, was senile? No, it's a different thing entirely. Yeah. You know, it's Tolstoy, right? Like all families are dysfunctional and all in different. No, every marriage is unhappy in its different way, right? Senility hits in different ways. But Donald Trump clearly is past his expiration date. I mean, he's not the sharp politician. I don't think Donald Trump of 2017 would be doing this.
You don't think so?
I don't think
so. I don't know.
I don't think he would have gone in. I mean, I think Bibi Netanyahu was whistling in his ear back then to do exactly this, and he refused.
Only because, I will point out two things, not to push back on you, I agree, but one, Syria has fallen, so the door to Iran is open from the way they're looking at it. And two, Donald Trump was so wrapped up with the Russiagate stuff. I don't know if he could have did anything under these terms. I mean, give me your take on that. Like, because those are two big differences that are missing from this term as opposed to last term. Russiagate has been demolished. I mean, you may have some Democrats that believe that nonsense, but for the most part, they do.
Yeah, I do think I'm gonna stick to what I said. I really think, you know, I think we have some strong evidence that Israel's been jonesing to attack Iran now with the U.S. Absolutely. At its side for a long time, and it's only now that, you know. And the most baffling thing to me is that apparently no one in the administration was on Trump's side here. Nobody. Right. There was no Dick Cheney. There was no Richard Pearl. There was no Paul Wolfowitz. There was no Donald Rumsfeld. There were no neocons telling him to do this, which I guess is to their credit and to Trump's credit for appointing them. But so this is all, I mean, it really truly is Israel's war. Right. And I mean, you know, it's not an exaggeration. We have an ad, so I'm going to go ahead and try to do that. Hopefully it's not like a a bad one. Here we go. This country wasn't handed to us. It was carved out one hard mile at a time from 1776 to right now. 250 years of grit, sacrifice, and men and women who refused to hold. Sea of Mud Apparel just dropped their 250-year anniversary shirt, built to honor where we came from and the fight it took to get here. Every piece is American sourced and manufactured in Nashville, Tennessee. No shortcuts, no overseas mass production, just real gear for real Americans. This isn't some soft throwaway patriotic tee. It's rugged, it's durable, and it means something when you wear it. So right now, sale items are buy one, get one free. So if you believe this country is still worth standing up for, this one's for you. Head to seaofmud.com. That's seaofmud.com. Use code RUMBLE for 10% off and take advantage of the BOGO deal, B-O-G-O, Sea of Mud Apparel, 250 years later, and we're not done yet. You know, I wanted to do, I mean, you know, I know Robbie loves a 1775 coffee, but we have to break out sometimes. Go ahead, though, you were saying.
Well, I was going to say, Israel's war, is it Israel's war? I mean, because the U.S. has been itching for this war for a very long time. And from my point of view, and look, we can talk about it, the U.S. uses Israel as a stalking horse. It's like, it's our dog in the region. Hey, you're going to do stuff that we don't want to get our hands on, but really we're getting our hands on by having you do it. And you can make an argument to me that there's a feedback mechanism taking place between the U.S. and Israel. Fair enough. Yeah. And that Israel has been aching for this war for decades. Again, fair enough. But let's be clear. Going into Iraq, Libya, Syria, et cetera, was all aimed ultimately at going after Iran. And it's been U.S. policy for decades to go after Iran. Donald Trump is just a fulfillment and a culmination of that particular policy, even though most presidents, for the most part, had sense enough not to do it during their administration. Give me your thoughts on that.
No, it's true. Iran was always the big boy in the room, right? I mean, everybody, you know, after 9/11 is a great example. First, Afghanistan. Why? Because not because Osama bin Laden was there. He wasn't. He was in Pakistan. They knew that at the time, as I reported at the time. But because it was easy. The Taliban didn't have an air force. You know, they were a ragtag militia. Yeah, it didn't stop them from defeating us over time. But, you know, that's a political will issue. Then they're like, okay, we're geared up for Iraq. Iraq is like, why did they do Iraq? Well, they would have loved to have done Iran because, after all, Iran financed, you know, Shiite militias in the Iraqi Civil War. But right. Iran was too big. The U.S. tried to take out Iran, you know, using Iraq as a proxy during the war in the 1980s. Didn't work. Iran is too big. It's too modern. It's too developed. It's too much civilization, right? It's just too. It's too much, even for an empire like the U.S. to bite off. It's Parthia to ancient Rome. It's too big, and so. But that doesn't mean they didn't want it. It's just that nobody thought it was possible, and right. I guess still nobody thinks it's possible. And clearly, it's not possible. So that's, you know, Trump decided to do something that wasn't possible, and he just proved what we already knew. We have some comments and questions here. Manchild, thanks for the $2. With Trump continuing to have explosive diarrhea on the world stage, can anyone find the Pepto, or is the administration just going to pull an Elvis and croak on the shitter? I vote for number two. I think this administration this presidency is in deep shit. I'd be very surprised if the president isn't forced to resign before the end of his term, at bare minimum. What about you?
You think so?
I just don't see how you stumble. It's May 5th. I mean, it's Cinco de Mayo, right? I don't see how we get to January 20th, 2029. I mean, that is a long, long way, right? Yeah. 2.5 fucking years of this nonsense. I mean, it's not going to get better. The economy is going to get worse. People are going to get restless. I mean, the president of Cornell ran over a student. You know, I mean, it's like things are crazy. And we need to talk about that. But yeah, I just don't see how you get there. It's kind of like this is a marathon runner who's faltering at mile 3. How do you get to mile 26?
I mean, in order for that to take place, you would need Republicans to effectively pull that chain and pull that cord. Well, it depends on, for one, I think it in part depends on the midterms, right? If you get a Democratic House, Democratic Senate, they're going to impeach his ass. I think they're going to impeach his ass. Whether they can take him out or not.
They can't convict in the Senate, though.
That's the catch. They can't take him out, but they are going to definitely give him hell going forward.
Be subpoenaed. Like all of his folks are going to have mad subpoena action coming out of the House of Representatives. Lawfare is on. Lawfare is go.
Do Republicans Because it, from your point of view, it doesn't take Republicans to turn for Trump to be like, okay, I'm out. Because it's hard for me to see that changeover, even though that changeover is possible depending on how bad things get, if Trump becomes a liability. Because let me ask you this. It seems that Trump's political strength is the population, meaning he has a population of people that are willing to crawl on glass to support Trump. Does that change? And if that changes, does the political calculus from Republicans also change? You're a student of history better than I am on the politics of the U.S.
So what are your thoughts? I think the answer is yes, but I'm usually pretty good at the how, right? Like when a prosecutor presents their narrative of a case to a jury, it's not enough to just say like, oh, she killed her husband. I have to know like what knife she used, what time of the day she used it, right, why she did it. I have to have a theory of the case. I don't have a theory of the case here. I don't know exactly how it goes down, but I don't see. But one way or the other, whether it's failing health, failing mental acuity, J.D. Vance sees an opportunity or the necessity to invoke the 25th Amendment. Enough Republicans crap out and just say like, oh my God, we can't all go down with this guy, but something's going to happen. I don't know what, but like something. And I don't think that's a hope thing. It's cause it's going to be ugly when it happens, but yeah. It's going to be, but I just don't see this person with this temperament, unable to listen to any of his own closest advisors, taking advice from a foreign leader from a country that means us ill and does not care about us at all. This is basically Trump's a foreign agent at this point. I mean, that's fucked up. And I just don't see how it sustains itself. Robbie, you have thoughts?
Well, yeah, because I think that it's an undeniable fact that Israel controls our government. And they do it through a couple of different ways. And I'm going to bring some receipts here. First note, Ted, when you and me were talking before the show started, your alma mater is taking away diplomas of people who criticized Israel. So think about that. You mm-hmm. go, you spend all this money, you buy a degree, you criticize a foreign country. Mm-hmm. And then the university revokes the diploma that you've earned. You can criticize China, Mexico, your own country. No problem at all. But if you criticize Israel, you're fried. If you want to know who controls you, find out who it is that you're not allowed to criticize. Rule number one. I think Voltaire said that, if I remember right. Ted, is that correct?
I think
I want to say that. That's his quote. Mm-hmm. Second, taking this a step further, we have almost 40 states have anti-BDS laws. Right. Texas famously says if you don't swear a pledge of economic loyalty to Israel, you cannot work as a contractor for the state of Texas. Well, that's a direct violation of the First Amendment. I get to choose who I spend money with and who I don't.
It's a government. You can. It's a government restraint on speech for sure.
100%. You don't have that restraint on any other country except for Israel. Then let's take this a step further.
Of course there's Benin. You're not allowed to say anything bad about Benin or Vanuatu.
Yeah, whatever. I don't know those.
But you
pick up the point that I'm saying here. And then we'll take it a step further. If you push hard enough, you can get debanked. Mm-hmm. You can get completely frozen out of society. There is no other country on this planet that has that power. And then you have the talking heads like Mark Levin, who's advocating the nuclear attack on another country. And you get your Republicans clapping like a bunch of stone seals because they think this is a great idea. And they keep in mind, these are the same Republicans who say, oh, we care about the Constitution. I'm a constitutional conservative. No, the hell you're not. You're a war-sucking pig.
Yeah, and they're all ignoring the War Powers Act.
Powers Act is unconstitutional. It's Act 2 of the Constitution. The War Powers Act should be abolished.
The War Powers Act was a stupid like workaround.
Well, they're not even following it, even with the stupidity of it. You know,
well, JT, I mean, it goes to what you said, right? If it's a rules-based order, and you get to make the rules, do laws really matter?
Yeah, they don't matter. Laws are for other people. Those are constraints on other people and countries, mm-hmm. not us. I mean, because and that gets to my point, right? unless there are costs imparted, then it doesn't matter. Like, meaning, if you can't do anything to me, your opinion of me, I don't care. If I have free operation and if you still have to deal with me, then I don't care. Like, there's a reason why the U.S. is deal adverse, because we feel like we don't have to accommodate the deal. It's just that, right? Like, if I'm making a deal with you and you can't do anything to me in order to maintain the fact or keep me to that deal, but I can impart costs on you, then you're stuck dealing with me regardless of what I do. That is the issue, and that is the position that the U.S. has found itself in for decades.
Now, let's talk about Trump. I mean, I do think we want to follow up on that, right? I mean, I think people need to know that. I think I don't see how a president with a 33% approval rating survives. That hasn't happened before.
Right.
So, you know, there's that, right? The last time we saw a president with those kind of numbers, we're talking about George W. Bush at the end of his term, after the disaster in Iraq. Before that, we're talking about like Nixon, maybe 6 months before resignation. You know, I mean, he's a lame duck, but this hitting this bottom before the first midterm election of his second term, that's early. And I just don't see the turnaround, right? I mean, this morning I heard Trump talking at a speech where he said, well, everybody asks, well, 6 weeks, what's taking so long? Vietnam, we were there for 19 years. I'm like, the reason we're asking what's taking so long is because you said you'd be done by now. This isn't like us making shit up and becoming impatient. Are we there yet? Right. This is like you repeatedly said, you know, I mean, he violates the Jeff Bezos rule over, you know, under promise, over deliver. He does exactly the opposite. So, of course, everyone's pissed.
Well, also, Vietnam didn't hurt the American economy either.
That's not true at all. No, Vietnam War absolutely decimated the American economy and led to the oil shocks of the mid 1970s. You know, it fucked us up. We left a lot of materiel and cash and investments back. You know, what people don't know is like, why were we in Vietnam, right? Massive natural gas resources. Yeah. That was the main thing. And it had a huge impact. And people started to feel it by 72, 73, which is right around the time that the Nixon administration got serious about withdrawal.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you with Trump, by the way, right? Like, I don't know the mechanism by which this stuff takes place, but it is a hard pill to swallow. I mean, for all intents and purposes, I agree with you that Trump is like, hey, I'm going to win the war. This is over with. We can do whatever we want. Oh, it's pretty much over with at this point, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, you're still taking military action. You still don't have control of the Strait of Hormuz. Iran is still firing on your ships, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Agreed. By the way, Robbie, you are right that, like, certainly Vietnam didn't shit the economy in 6 weeks. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, because that's what I was thinking of. Because when you talk about, no, Vietnam wrecked the American economy, I'm just trying to think of how. I mean, unless we're importing a massive amount of rice.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it was a cause and effect thing. But I mean, let's look at this at scale. Vietnam did not turn off the global energy market.
No.
Right? No. So nowadays, I mean, you can make a case that Nike would be in a full-on panic if something happened. It'd be bad for them, but not necessarily bad for anybody else.
Right.
What we're doing with Iran, I mean, our local newspaper saying that we could actually start running out of gas here in Western Montana within 6 weeks.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
And the ranchers are completely shit in the bed because...
And diesel costs are stratospheric.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And so now, irony of ironies, a lot of the farmers are starting to try to go north to our Canadian friends, and the Canadians are just laughing at us.
It's also the beginning of the summer travel season. Us Americans, and I'm one of them, we love our road trips. Yes. And this is it's a big country. Yeah, and flying, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big deal. It's not insignificant. This is a new norm. I guess from my point of view, whether you're talking about China passing sanctions on America, in this case, kind of sanctions on America, basically don't acknowledge U.S. sanctions. Okay, that's new. That's a whole different animal, right? This is the other, quote unquote, superpower exerting its economic influence in a way that has never been exerted before on the U.S. Or whether you get Iran. I mean, I think part of the issue, too, is the U.S. and America knows that the U.S. spends $1 trillion on military, meaning every
1.5 soon.
1.5 soon. Every American knows we spend like more than like nine times or than the nine other nations combined. Maybe that number is five other nations combined. But
no, it's like nine. And the thing is, we're not talking about like little wimpy nations with like Luxembourg. We're talking about like Russia, one of Germany, the biggest China, arms producers in the world.
Russia. Yeah. And so America knows that. So when you're going into a war with, let's say, Iran, the expectation is, why isn't this over with yet?
Yeah, we should be wiping the floor with them, right? Yeah. I mean, except for the fact that we surrounded them with bases and we thought that we had them right where we wanted them. But actually they had us right where we wanted, wanted us, because we created targets. Yep. You know, our biggest protection in the early days of the Republic and now is those two big oceans and two friendly allied countries that keep, you know, long distance things from hitting us. So going to put a base like right up on the border of our enemy seems like a mistake.
Yeah, it became a
liability. Monte Italia, thanks for the $5. Hey, Robbie, what make is your home protection? Safety first.
Oh, rather, that is a SKS made in 1963, Chinese, chrome lined barrel, 7.62x39 round. Works very, very good if someone comes in uninvited.
All right. Okay. So, let's move on to this story out of Cornell University. So, Michael Kotlikoff is like all the Ivy League schools that have been wrecked by the Gaza protests. Cornell has had a whole raft of presidents since this all started. The latest one, who's been there for just about a year, is this guy Michael Kotlikoff. They had a confab on campus last night, where the students got together to talk about the aftermath and, you know, what could have been done better and trying to like, let's have a civilized discussion about Gaza. And a bunch of students followed the president out to his car, and they were basically, saying like, demanding that he talk to them. And he's like, well, I'm leaving. We're done here. And he backed up his car I'm just going to talk about the stuff that is no question about it. Backed up his car and drove over one of the students' feet. And then knocked another one down. So at least two students were struck here. And then he left the scene without waiting for the authorities. He says that he was scared, that they were banging on his car, that they were standing behind him, refusing to let him leave. They deny all that and say that there's no truth to it at all. Look, I don't know what happened. All I can say is, it's a bad look for an Ivy League school, right? I mean, it's like, you guys can and should do better. I tend to, you know, obviously I'm on the side of the students. I think that they have the, you know, first of all, they have the right cause on their side, but they also happen to have, you know, the right to speak to their university president, who they normally don't have a chance to get in touch with. You know, I can commiserate with his desire to get out of Dodge and leave, but you can't just run over people, you know, I mean, unless you're ICE. You're allowed to do it if you're ICE. You know, what do you think?
I think that certain positions and certain labels have responsibilities attached to those labels. So if I'm a parent, then I have certain responsibilities to my kids. One of which, I need to take care of my kids. I need to pay for rent. I need to pay for a house. I need to have those kids taken care of, et cetera, et cetera. And you can do that for pretty much anything, employee, et cetera. If you are the president of a university and you have taken a certain political position, maybe you need to talk to the students. I mean, that's kind of part of the job. I get, right, as a human being, you don't necessarily want a large number of people yelling at you, especially for something that you feel that you can't necessarily do anything about or position that you've effectively taken. But nobody told you to take the job of a university president, especially when you're in the middle of a contentious issue like a genocide And if you believe that your position is sustainable and you have a lot of students who disagree with you, at some point, you got to talk to those students. I get, right, that you don't want students screaming at you when you're getting in your car. And I don't doubt that they probably was hanging around the car. Like, meaning when you're looking at protests and protesters are like, well, they don't talk to us, but you're screaming at the person. Well, the person, regardless of whether you're right, which the students are, that person is still a person, right?
Right.
And that person may feel some kind of way about people screaming at them or that they're surrounding the car. I don't think that the guy backed up intentionally to try to hit a student.
No.
I think he was just trying to get away. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, he should stay there for the cops, but that's a little bit difficult when people are screaming at you and when you've just hit a student with your vehicle.
Right. And he may have also, I'm projecting here, he may have also thought, listen, I voluntarily showed up to this forum to speak about this topic. I've said my piece. The forum's done. I get to go home.
Right. But people want to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. But the rub is, it is very difficult to have a conversation about genocide. That's very difficult, especially when you're on the side of defending that genocide in some way.
Right. And especially because Cornell, like all the other, like Columbia and Harvard and all the other Ivy League schools have sided with the genociders. Exactly. And have come and have not just sort of sided politically, but have cracked down mercilessly on the students. They've expelled students, suspended students. Yeah. They've gone after professors. They've fired professors. They threw professors under the bus at those Elise Stefanik Capitol Hill kangaroo hearings, right? I mean, they've revoked, as Robbie mentioned, they've revoked college degrees. People graduate. They've expelled people from campus. They invited ICE to come in and arrest their own students for writing op-eds. I mean, so these schools have been really, it hasn't even been a matter of like, they have their thumb on the scale, and they even banned, I love the fact that they banned a group called, wait for it, Jewish Voice for Peace. I mean, it's a Jewish group, and you banned it. Columbia did.
Anti-Semitic bastards. Anti-Semitic motherfuckers.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, no, I agree with you. Those students have every right to be animated. Every right to be animated.
Right.
And I don't blame them.
And he has the right to go home.
Yeah, God,
I
mean,
I would just say personally to my fellow lefties who are in favor, who are trying to support the people of Gaza, seriously, don't stand behind people's cars.
Yeah, don't do that.
It's not smart. You'll get hit.
They're going to hit you. And they're going to claim I was scared. I was terrified.
Don't stand in front of people. Yeah,
I don't buy, I don't believe for a moment that the man did his car in a way where he was intentionally trying to hit a kid.
Right. But just don't I mean, as a matter of course, even in the most apolitical of circumstances, like in a parking lot, don't walk right behind someone who's a car when someone's in the car and the engine's running. Right. Don't do it.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea.
You're going to get hit.
Yeah. It will happen. Let's see. Andre 420 Reform, thanks for the donation. Robbie is a CCP plant confirmed, LOL. Well, we'll let Robbie into. Are you a Chinese Communist Party begonia?
I am a huge fan of Soviet era firearms, because if you live in a place like Montana where it gets very, very cold, and if you like to hunt like I do,
right.
If you got to take your gun apart out in the middle of the woods, you want large oversized pieces that you can use, that you can work with while wearing gloves. You cannot do that with modern American firearms. They suck. And the 7.62 by 39 round is fantastic. 300 yards range. It'll put either a four-legged or a two-legged critter down. No problem at all.
Okay. Robbie, I'm going to leave you.
Go shooting. I enjoy shooting too.
I love shooting. Have you ever shot an SKS, JT?
No, not that specific gun. I do enjoy shooting them. I mean, when I was there, I went to Slovakia once with my, I took my ex-girlfriend, to Slovakia. She was Austrian. And I was like, we're going to have the greatest date ever. You're never going to have a date this good. And she was like, really? I was like, yes, really. All right. First thing in the morning, I crashed the car in the parking garage.
While trying to hit a protester.
I had to drive the car back to the thing. So we're sitting in the dealership for God knows how long while the rental thing goes through. We get to the shooting range. It's in Slovakia, and they have pretty much any gun you can think of. Sniper rifles, machine guns, the works. And so I'm like, this is going to be great. Yeah. She has like a six shooter, like just a small six shooter. She shoots it once and like drops the gun. It's like, oh, she's like, it's so violent. And I'm like, dude, this is great. But I spend the next hour shooting every gun that they got there. I love shooting. This is fun. So if I come to Montana, Robbie, we got to go shoot.
Listen, I'm going to bring you here because one of the best ways to cut down trees, I said that deliberately, cut down trees. I have a Mosin Nagant. Thing was made in 1938. It's got the Soviet steel. It's authentic Soviet. And my dad, he actually got that in Korea. He was a Korean War veteran. He killed a Chinaman that had the rifle. He took it apart, mailed it home piece by piece. And when he got home from Korea, put it back together. And the bullets is a 7.62 by 54R. It's about yay long. And if you shoot a pine tree, it will blow the back out. So they just fall over. Wow. It's a magnificent rifle.
I'm still a fan of the flamethrower drone, but what can I say? That's a whole different topic.
It's so much fun. But you have people asking how they can become paid subscribers and supporters of the channel. So we'll go ahead and tell y'all how y'all can do that real quick. If you're on Rumble or on YouTube, you have to be on the website. You cannot be on the app. And so with Rumble, you click on the live stream tab, wherever the chat is or you are, you're going to see an option that says subscribe. It's $5 a month. Become a channel subscriber. You get access to all of the content, premium and regular, with no ads. On YouTube, you click on where it says subscribe, and you can join at any time. But with Rumble, the limitation is that you can only become a channel member during a live stream. The reason that Rumble does that, with YouTube takes a 40% cut of the channel subscription donations that are taken every month. Rumble, the creator gives the creator gets 100%. Rumble does not take a cut, which is huge. The drawback is, though, is that you can only do it during a live stream. So if you want to support D Program and JT and Ted and little me with my gun fetish, that is one of the best ways that you can do it. And JT is also, you're streaming now on Rumble now, correct?
I am streaming on Rumble. That is correct. I get you on your 7-hour live stream, chess live stream.
We got to get you doing Rumble Studio. That way you start getting your ads because you're still using StreamYard.
Yeah, we got to have a show meeting like tomorrow or today or whatever, just afterwards.
Tomorrow works.
Let's do tomorrow afternoon. All right, guys, Frank Friel, thanks for the $5. Having a bloated military budget doesn't mean we have the best military. It means we're getting ripped off. You're here. Let's see. I'll put my visual back on there, guys. I'll keep you on this for this, Robbie, for this last segment. So federal magistrate Judge Zia Faruqi is pissed off at the DC jail that is holding Cole Allen. Cole Allen is, of course, the accused shooter at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. He apparently was placed in severe lockdown. He was fully restrained by a 5-point shackling system and placed on suicide watch that had him 24/7 in a padded, lighted cell with no access to the phone. In other words, he can't talk to his lawyers, books, religious material, or recreational time. And he is a religious man. According to the judge, this is unfair and seems to be used to punish him before he's convicted of any crime. He pointed out that the J6 sirs were not treated this badly. It seems to me, I mean, I'm just going to say, sounds to me like the Trump administration let it be known that this guy is to be treated poorly. I have no evidence of that, but that's just my guess.
You know, you take a shot at the king and you miss. What do you expect?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. I mean, it's like the oldest rule in the book.
Right wingers are saying, like, well, you know, like it's ridiculous to care about the conditions that someone is held in. They don't think that when it's one of their own, right? When it's January 6th. I mean, look, this can be anybody. Like something like 1 out of 15 American men end up in jail or prison at one point in their lives. I've read as many as 1 out of 8. I mean, I've spent, I don't know, probably a total of about a week in American jails. You know, it's not that unusual. I think it's in everybody's interest that everybody be treated well, and bear in mind the fact that you're talking about people who haven't been convicted of any crime at all. But even if you have been, I mean, how a society treats its prisoners is a huge metric of what kind of society it is.
Well, Luigi's been in prison for over a year and hasn't gone to trial. So, I mean, there is no justice. We have a legal system. We don't have a justice system.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Well, it's not about justice. It's just not. It's about a country maintaining law and order in the way that it. Look, yes, he's going to be roughly treated, just like the J6ers were roughly treated. J6ers were roughly treated because from the standpoint of the government, you raided the Capitol. It is immensely humiliating, and you want to deter that particular behavior by treating people as poorly as possible so people can see that these people are being treated as poorly as possible. I suspect the same thing is true for Cole. Is that right? It's not about being right or wrong. It's about the way a government tries to instill a certain amount of authority saying, don't do this. And this is what Trump is doing to him. This is what Biden did to J6ers.
Totally. Totally. Guys, I'm trying to hit the TMI stream on Rumble, and I'm not having any luck. So I'm going to let me see if I can troubleshoot this at the end of the show.
Probably do. I don't know what's going to happen.
You're
live. You're live.
Am I live? Okay.
Yeah,
let me.
You're 35 funny. Seconds in.
Oh, that's so funny because it didn't show. All right. So now
I have no idea what the hell it's broadcasting, but
it's not broadcasting. Yeah. I don't know what it's broadcasting either. Okay. Now I'm going to hit the. There we go. All right. So hitting the. Yeah, just hitting the countdown. Okay, countdown is off and running. All right, so anyway, everyone, thanks so much for tuning in to the program with Ted Rollins and Marl Thomas. Thank you, Robbie West, for producing and for filling in yesterday. Robbie's going to be filling in for Manila Chan on TMI. It's coming up in just a minute. So stay tuned. Go over to TMI with Ted Rollins and Manila Chan. We will see you back here on Deprogram 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, Eastern Time. Thank you so much. Bye, Jamal.
Have a good one, guys. Be safe.